둘, 셋, 파!
For Hey Army and fellow music fans, I'm Kayla.
And I'm Bethany, and we're the hosts of Standing BTS from the Consequence Podcast Network. We're a bi-weekly show that covers the impact and legacy of K-pop group BTS.
We mix the perfect blend of research and fangirl as we take a deep dive into lyrics during album reviews, theorize over music videos, and keep up with their current events.
No BTS topic is off limits. We welcome everyone into the conversation, whether you're a casual fan, committed ARMY, or someone who's just curious about one of the biggest music groups in the world.
Come chat with us every other Thursday with a new episode wherever podcasts are found.
Welcome to the In Defense of Ska podcast.
There's a lot of like, okay, well, you like ska, name three bands that aren't the Boss Tones.
I'm your host, Aaron Carnes, music journalist and author of the book In Defense of Ska.
And I'm your co-host, Adam Davis, veteran ska musician from the bands Omnigon and Link 8.
On our show, we aim to push back on the mainstream's negative perception of ska music.
There are so many great untold stories throughout the history of ska. The show features interviews with everyone from the Mighty Mighty Boss Tones to Fishbone, Fall Out Boy singer Patrick Stump, and the Police drummer Stuart Copeland. Join us on In Defense of Ska from the Consequence Podcast Network.
It's easy to hear your favorite artist on WFPK from wherever you are. Listen on your smart speaker, live stream from our website at WFPK.org from Louisville Public Media.
Oh, look, you got loads of cool stuff behind there.
Consequence Podcast Network.
And welcome to another edition of Kyle Meredith With. It's the interview series presented by WFPK at WFPK.org, Consequence, and the Consequence Podcast Network. Thanks as always for making your way here, of course, for checking out the episode. And I do hope you hit that subscribe button so you can keep up with the entire series. You do that, I give you three brand new interviews every single week. A new one every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. Great way to keep up with your favorite artists and discover those new ones at all the usual places, including Spotify, Apple Podcasts, at NPR, WFPK.org, Consequence, YouTube for the video versions, or anywhere you get your podcast from, you can subscribe to Kyle Meredith With. Some of my recent guests have included Neck Deep, the band Neck Deep, Michael Shannon, the actor, on with Jason Narducci to talk about covering REM. Spoke with Slater Kinney, Jack Antonoff dropped in to discuss the new Bleachers album, Peter Capaldi, Doctor Who himself, along with Tom Mucci were here as we talked about Criminal Records on Apple TV+. McKenna Grace, you know her from the Ghostbusters movies. We talked with Janelle Monáe, Andy Taylor of Duran Duran, Queens of the Stone Age lead singer Josh Homme, and Dolly Parton. Just an example of what you get when you subscribe to the Kyle Meredith With podcast. And if you're already subscribed, please do me a favor and give the show a rating wherever you're listening from and a review. Those are the two things that go so far in helping out a show like this. Subscribe, rating, and review. Kyle Meredith here today. So excited. My guest, Neil Halstead of the band Slow Dive. They're, of course, back with a new record called Everything Is Alive. It's their second album since reforming. And Neil's going to discuss how starting the LP with 40 electronic instrumentals and the way the group typically works, although with this album sort of trying it in a way they had never done it. We'll hear about them using the same studio since their beginnings, one which still has the same couch as it has for over 30 years, and how he writes with mood in mind, a little bit more than lyrics. Neil's also going to tell us about how he resurrected the song Andalusia Plays from his early 2010 solo work, how his love of 60s pop finds its way into songs like Kisses and A Life, the loads of unreleased songs that are in his vaults, how they took some cues from The Cure, and scoring the movie The Unknown Country, starring Lily Gladstone. All that's and more as we talk Everything Is Alive. It's Kyle Meredith with Neil Halstead of Slow Dive.
Hi, Kyle. How are you?
I'm well. And seriously, it's so great to talk to you. The new music, the old music, everything you've done in between, I'm such an admirer of. But this new album is so good. And I'm even looking at your tour list here. You guys got a monster. You're going to be out on the road for a little bit this year, right?
Yeah, and we did a fair bit last year as well, starting in September. So I haven't really looked at the schedule yet. I don't want to scare myself, but yeah, there's a few gigs. It's good though. We sort of enjoy the touring. You know, it's a bit tough being away from home for long periods, but we try not to be away for too, you know, usually it's like 3 or 4 weeks at a time, you know, and then we'll be home for a bit. So yeah,
good way to do it. But yeah, and I should mention, because I'm here in Louisville, May 7th, you'll be here in Louisville at Paris Town. So
I look forward to that. I think last time I was in Louisville was maybe 15, 16 years ago. I did like a weird radio convention there.
Oh, the non-convention when it was still here.
Yeah. I drank a lot of whiskey. I hung out with Ed Harcourt and Nora Jones, which was fun. I think that was when she was having a really big record, actually. She was.
She had a big record.
Starting her journey.
Yeah, it was an infamous show for her as well, because of those radio conventions. People can be a little bit loud and gabby during the shows.
Yeah, yeah.
And she was having none of that. Just shut it down.
I remember being told about it. I missed it, but I was told all about it. Yeah, she told them off.
Good on her too, because they deserved it. No, it's good to see. I mean, you know, with that, you, like, you have been touring for a very long time. Has your routines changed these days? Like, how do you keep yourself sane and busy on the road on tours like this?
Still trying to figure that out. The temptation was always to drink a lot, you know, and I found like I can't really do that now. You know, I still like to go and find a nice pint of Guinness somewhere, but rather than spend all day there, I'll try and do some other stuff as well. It can be tricky. It's a sort of a weird, you know, your day is a bit odd, you know, so you know, because everything happens, you're sort of, everything is sort of, you know, it's this thing that's happening at 9 or 10 o'clock at night, you know, so the rest of the day, yeah, it's just figuring out. But there's, you know, I try, you know, I always have a laptop with me and guitar, you know, and so I try and do music or work on different things. Or
you can't just binge Curb Your Enthusiasm so many times, I guess.
But, you know, there's always stuff to see, you know, we're always usually in interesting cities. And so there's always, if you can have the motivation and, you know, go and see an art gallery or, and at this point, there's usually someone I know somewhere close. So
that's helpful. I mean, you know, friends in every city kind of a thing. That's
exactly.
Very
helpful. So it's just like, it's always a nice chance to catch up with people if you can, you know, so yeah.
Well, I am excited to see this record perform live, but getting into it, you know, so the story's been told, you know, it's now been a handful of years since the last record, and for all the obvious reasons, pandemic, et cetera, et cetera. But even with that, did you find that getting that reunion record out of the way, did that lend anything to, did that take the weight off of getting into this one? I mean, at all, is there any direct comparison to the two records?
Yeah, I mean, it did feel quite different, I suppose, approaching this one. And I kind of felt like we needed to start it somewhere sort of different to where we'd started other records, you know, just so that there was, just to give it a sort of an element of trying to do something different. And I think the, you know, Slow Dive, we recorded straight out of having done a bunch of touring after we got back together, and I think it just carried that kind of energy with it. So it was a quicker record to do in that, and this one was, it took a lot longer, you know. We started in, I guess I started throwing ideas out to the band in 2019, so it took a while, and it was quite slow at times, painful process. You know, it took a while to figure out what kind of record it was going to be, you know, and probably that didn't, it kind of figured itself out really towards the end. But it, you know, we started off with, I sent the band like over 40 ideas that were just electronic sketches, really. Well, some of them were more finished than others, but they were all just sort of instrumental electronic things that I done really in the last sort of 5-6 years, just stuff that I've done on my own in the studio. And I thought it might be an interesting way to start a Slow Dive record, you know, just use a few of those to and just see where they went, really, you know.
Do you find that that did change the way you all did song? Like so much of music happens in a jam. I'm going to use that loosely, you know, it's just noodling around, you know, finding your spot. But I don't know if that's the same for you, but, you know, when you're sending it to them, it, you know, and here's demos or whatever, here's pieces.
Yeah.
Like, how much does that approach then change the way that you write a song? Because it doesn't just become, you know, a group of people in a room feeling their way out until the song is created.
Yeah, I mean, there's only a few songs we've ever really worked that way. But what we do is usually, you know, just work on an idea. So if I bring an idea in, we work on it as a band, you know. And in some ways that there is an element of jamming with that, you know, because you're just playing around with an initial idea and you just see what kind of direction you can take it in. So you'll try it in loads of different ways and just see how you can extend the idea. But I think digital recording makes that process really interesting because you can, you know, you can really dig into taking loops and different pieces of things and playing around with them really easily, which was much harder to do. You know, when we first started recording in the 90s, it was still all on tape. And, you know, Melon Yellow was a track where we literally had a song that we just accidentally put on the tape the wrong way around, and it sounded really mental backwards, you know, so we ended up basically just adding a few things on top of that and some vocals, and that was the song. But doing something like that now was much easier to do, you know. But
do you get the happy accidents in that way as often?
You do, yeah, because and that's really almost what SoDive looked for, really, initially, is just that happy accident where you're like, oh, that's cool. Let's work on that, you know, use that as the basis for something.
And we'll be right back right after this. Welcome back. It's Kyle Meredith with Neil Halstead of SoDive. Correct me if I'm wrong, like, you all still record in the same place you always have, right?
Yeah, I mean, I have a studio here in Cornwall where I live, which I do a lot of work in. But the SoDive, we've used a studio, our friend's Chris Hufford's studio in which is out near Oxford, and we've used that studio since pretty much day one. So we always end up going back there and doing some work there. It's just a nice, like, I guess it's a comfortable environment. I still got the same sofa, you know, when we were kids.
Does the sofa get cleaned? The sofas don't get cleaned, right? That's not a thing you really do.
It's a very lived leather sofa,
right? Know? Because every studio had a leather sofa, especially back then.
Of course. A friend of mine told me this great story about he got to work with Tom Jones once doing a vocal, and he had a pretty grotty studio, and he felt compelled to buy a new leather sofa before Tom came in and did his vocal. And apparently he came in with his entourage, did the vocal in about 5 minutes and disappeared without mentioning once how nice the sofa was. Leather sofas were pretty de rigueur in the 80s and 90s, I think. I'm not sure if it's still the same. And
I feel like there's a coffee table book somewhere in this conversation, yeah, about the sofas, the studio sofas of the 80s and 90s.
Studio sofas, yeah.
If you're looking for a side project, let's just throw that.
Tell some stories, yeah.
So back on the songwriting, and sort of further on what you were talking about here. When I hear you talk about songs, a lot of the time, of course, you know, I mean, there is a SoDive sound, even though it changes from album to album. But when I hear you talk about it, it's less about, like, a lot of songs, oh, that song's about, you know, it becomes about the story. With you, it always seems to start with the mood. Is that how you start a song? Is it about mood with you?
I think it really is with SoDive. I mean, when I'm, you know, I spent a long time writing acoustic music and basically making almost folk records, and it was the other way around. The lyrics were kind of the grounding thing. That was the bit you worked around. And with SoDive, it's definitely, we work around an atmosphere, you know, so it's that's the spark, really, that begins the thing. Yeah.
You get one moment on there, right? I mean, the Andalusia Please.
Yeah, which is actually a really old song of mine that I hadn't put on a solo record, and it just hung around, and I ended up kind of redoing the melody a bit, and sort of thought, well, maybe it'll work for a So Dive album, you know, in a slightly different way. Yeah,
it's a cool moment on the record. Like, how much is in the vault? How many opportunities do you have? Because you said, like, you started with like 40 ideas that you sent over.
Oh yeah, there's a lot in the vault. There's a lot in the vault, Kyle. Yeah. I mean, I go to the studio a lot, and I work on stuff, and most of it never sees the light of day. And you forget about it, you know, that's the problem. And now it's even easier to forget about stuff because hard drives just kind of sit there, and you gets full, and you get another hard drive, and you forget about all, you know, it, and then you realize you don't have the right lead for the old hard drive anymore. You know, stuff like that. So it just sits there.
Well, this, you know, when I see when artists get further into their career, when they've been together longer, you know, it's almost like, what am I trying to say? There's less time wasted, if that's a way to put it. It sounds like a bad way to put it, but you know, everything becomes more concise. There seems to be less chances for a deluxe edition where you just have, and here's, you know, 20 other songs that we recorded that didn't make the record.
Yeah, I think we've always been very, maybe overly curated, and you know, we curate our stuff. Maybe, you know, I like when we did the first album, we didn't want to put any of the EP tracks on the record because we wanted it to be a completely new record, which seems a bizarre decision now because our strongest material at that point was the, you know, the singles, really, you know. When we, like, Alan McGee had to literally beg us to put Catch the Breeze on the first album. He wanted us to put, you know, a bunch of stuff from the EPs because I suppose he realized that actually albums are the things that survive, really. EPs are not the go-to artifact, you know. But I think we've always been a bit like that, where we just want to have this one sort of thing, be it an EP or an album, that is distinct and individual and is not, you know, doesn't have a lot of filler, you know. I mean, personally, I don't like long albums. I think albums should be 8 or 9 songs, 40 minutes tops, maybe 45. But you know, in the 90s, everyone was putting out CDs with like over an hour's worth of material on it, and it just becomes a bit boring, you know. And I think probably just growing up listening to vinyl and being, you know, that thing of having 4 songs, 5 songs, or whatever each side, and it's a nice chunk of music. You know, it's a good way to consume it, I think.
It's really, artists really had it figured out early on because of the parameters. I mean, that's, as they would say, you couldn't put too much music on one side of the record because it would degrade the sound. So you sort of had, like, we figured out, just by chance, it seems like 40 minutes is a really good amount of time to put together a piece of musical art.
Yeah, that's right. And you can take a little break halfway if you want, roll a joint, whatever it is you want to do, have a cup of coffee. But yeah, I mean, it always, maybe because we condition ourselves to that length, that anything more feels too much to me. But yeah, there's only so long you can focus, I think, or concentrate on the music.
And we'll be right back right after this. Welcome back. It's Kyle Meredith with Neil Halstead of Slow Dive. As someone who really was paying attention to the music of the 60s and 70s, and I think it was your bandmates that was saying, you know, when it came to 60s pop, like, you were the person that probably listened to that a little bit more than everybody else.
Yeah, I'm a massive 60s kind of kid.
But at the same time, like, you don't mind going for the droney experimental stuff on the other side. Like, is there ever a contrasting little argument that happens inside you about, you know, what to do? Like you have this classic pop side, and you have this great, you know, for better terms, shoegazy drony side to you. Like, what's the compromise there? How does that work?
I don't think you need to. I mean, I think you just, if you like, I think we all as a band sort of like both sides of that, you know. So I guess it's nice to try and keep both sides alive, you know. So I think we did that right from the off with the very first EP, and we sort of continued. We had a sort of tradition with the EPs where we would put the single on the A side, and then there'd be something like an instrumental or something a bit different on the B side. And so I think the albums just expand that a little bit. You know, it's always trying to fit both all aspects of the band onto the record. You know, you don't want to confine yourself. I don't think we'd feel comfortable just doing an album of pop songs, and we probably couldn't. You know, I think there's definitely a side of us that really just loves a great pop song. You know, we just did some shows with The Cure, and they're like, you know, we're all massive, massive Cure fans since we were kids. And just, I think they're really good at that. You know, they have these amazing pop songs, and then they have these great drawn out, you know, things like A Forest that just go on, and they, you know, but it's still compelling, and it's, you know, it's still beautiful. And they're a band that does that really well, I think, you know, combine those two things.
Absolutely. Do you think we'll ever hear that Cure album that's become Chinese Democracy for them?
Well, rumors are afoot that it may see daylight, you know. Nick is our resident Cure expert, so he's always feeding us little things. And but yeah, who knows? I hope so. You know, I've the new stuff they were playing live sounds amazing. Like the first song, the song they open with, it is really, really good. And so hopefully, yeah.
Those moments, they are evident on here. I think you've talked about them before. The kisses and say, is it a leaf? Is it a life? Like
a life.
I've gone back and forth. I was like, I need someone to say this because I want to call it Alfie to begin with. But
it's weird, Rachel. I mean, Rachel always used to call it Alfie. And for about a year, she was calling it Alfie. And at a certain point, I was like, it's actually a life. But I don't know why it is a life. It just was, you know, when you're working on rough ideas, they usually end up having really stupid sort of working titles. And that one always was that and stayed that. And it might have just been a spelling.
Happy accident. There we go. But those pop sensibilities are in both of those songs. And hearing you talk about even second guessing a song like Kisses, like maybe it's too pop. Like lessons learned that maybe there's not such a thing for you all, because that's, if The Cure is any example, I guess.
Yeah, I think when we were working on Kisses, that's the song that probably went through it. We recorded it in so many different ways. And I think a lot of that was because we were scared of the pop version, which was the one we put on the record, because it's quite light lyrically, at least the chorus is very light lyrically, and it felt, we didn't want to make a kind of facetious track, you know. And I think, like, I always worried that it was too light, and because it came very easily as a song, it was one of those ones where I did the demo and I sent it to everyone, and I was like, does anyone know where this song comes from? Because it felt so familiar to me, and I felt like I must have, you know, rip someone else off, you know. So I was like, I was saying to Nick, is this like a Cure song? Is it a New Order song? It's just because it had those elements to me, but I couldn't tell if I'd actually taken one of their songs. So you're always like slightly scared of the ones that come easy, you know. It's kind of like there must be something wrong with it, you know.
It ends up being a nice hit for you guys. That's, you know.
It's... Yeah, and I love playing it live. It's a really fun one to do live, and it's interesting, like, how familiar that one's become to the audience already, you know.
So on the other one, on A Life, what happened when you stepped up to the mic?
That song was actually, my partner Ingrid wrote. The part that Rachel sings was actually written by her, and it was a song that I'd been playing around the house quite a lot, but it was pretty similar to, slightly different to what you hear, but it didn't have those breakdown sections. And Ingrid started singing this something along to it, and I was like, "Oh, that's really cool. Let's record that." And we ended up sort of making it into a into another section in the song, and then obviously Rachel resung it. But yeah, it's definitely a mood piece, I suppose. But
it does happen. Like Slab is the same. Like Slab is really, I think, more of what I was thinking along the lines of that. Like, what happens when you go up to a song where it's just like, it's vocal things. That's what I was getting at. Yeah.
The Slab is definitely more in that vibe. You know, A Life has got this story about a river, which was sort of, I think, just harking back to where Rachel and I grew up. And you know, the river was quite an important part of the town and all that sort of stuff. And but thinking about that, I guess rivers are, you know, any town has got a river, right? Generally. You know, but it's like where the legend comes from. There's always like stories about people, you know, dark stories or whatever. You know, rivers are cool, particularly in England. I think, you know, we have an interesting relationship to rivers. But yeah, but that's where A Life comes from. So that yeah, but the Slab is definitely a kind of, we just wanted it to be this heavy, slabbish bit of music.
But I love how the vocals just float around, and it's like you can't you can sing along to it and you can't at the same time. You know, it's almost like if I try to sing along to the Slab, I'm more or less creating another vocal part for it, you know, at the same time.
Yeah, ideal. Yeah.
That's cool. Those mood moments. And I'll quickly also, because I was looking at my notes here, the Unknown Country. Lily Gladstone having a big moment right here.
Yeah.
What did you do with that?
Marissa Maltz, the director, I guess got in touch because she wanted to use a couple of slow dive tunes in the film. And then she sent what she had of the film. It wasn't finished at that point. And obviously it's Lily's, I think it's her first sort of full feature. But yeah, I mean, I really love the film, and I offered to do some score work for it. And so I ended up doing a few scenes score work. But yeah, it's a great film. I think if people get a chance to see it, it's a sort of, I don't know, it's sort of like a docu-film in some ways. You know, it's not like a scripted film, you know, and a lot of the people in it aren't really acting. They're real, you know. But Lily is acting, but is also real. It's, yeah, it's an interesting kind of, but it's beautifully shot. The cinematography is amazing. It's a kind of a road movie, you know. And yeah, Lily's gone on, and she's, you know, the Killers of the Flower Moon. And I think she just got a
Golden Globe.
Yeah, so, which is amazing. So, and yeah, Marissa's great, the director. She's, you know, she's working on another film at the minute that I'm doing some music for, which kind of is sort of somewhat related to Unknown Country. But yeah, well worth checking out. Yeah.
Well, I look forward to checking that one out too. In the meantime, I love the new record, and I'm excited to see you guys May 7th right here in the Louisville. Neil, thank you so much, seriously, for taking the time to talk today, man. It's been a real, real pleasure.
Thanks, Carl. And yeah, we'll see you at the show, I hope.
And my thanks to Neil Slowdive. Their new record is called Everything is Alive. Thanks to you, again, for checking out the episode. Please do hit that subscribe button while you're hanging around. Again, you do that, you get 3 new interviews sent to you every single week, new and every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. All the usual spots that you can do that, including Spotify, Apple Podcast, NPR, WFPK.org, Consequence, YouTube for the video versions, or anywhere you get your podcast from, subscribe to Kyle Meredith With. And if you're already subscribed, please do take a moment to give the show a rating and leave a review. Talk about why you like it or your favorite episodes, whatever inspires you. Then after that, head over to WFPK.org. It's where I'm hanging out every weeknight, starting at 6 p.m. Eastern. You'll get 4 hours of classics from the 70s, 80s, and 90s. You get the best in new music. There are bonus interviews, lots of music news as well. One of my recent shows featured the music of Edwin Collins, Mary Lou Lord, and Semisonic, PJ Harvey. Let's see. Andrew Bird, Prince, The Killers, Aquanetas, Jim Blossoms, Counting Crows, The Innocence Mission, Modern English, Hooray for the Riff Raff, Adrian Linker from Big Thief, Chica, Fishbone, Grace Potter, Sean Colvin, Middle Kids, Billie Holiday, Jimmy's Chicken Shack, Lenny Kravitz, Chartreuse, and my interview with Vince Clark of Erasure, Depeche Mode, and Yazoo. And again, an example of what you get every weeknight starting at 6 p.m. Eastern at WFPK.org. Consequence has your music and film news. You can also find me on the old social media sites. The address is always the same, at Kyle Meredith. So I do hope you like and follow along. And that does it for another edition. I'm Kyle Meredith, and I'll see you next time.
Consequence Podcast Network.
Yeah, excellent stuff. Thank you for, all right.
It's easy to hear your favorite artist on WFPK from wherever you are. Listen on your smart speaker, live stream from our website at WFPK.org from Louisville Public Media.